We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Jeff Calkins is an award-winning columnist from Daily Memphian. He's also the host of the Jeff Calkins Show. That's weekdays, 9 to 11, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He joins me every day a little after 5. He's here right now. Jeff Calkins, how are you?
I'm getting killed.
Well, why? Because I finally got you on the James Wiseman quit the team train?
You got me on the James Wiseman quit the team train, and now I'm getting killed. Now I'm getting killed on Twitter. Everyone's killing me. Evidently, his sister's tweeting about me. Rex Chapman's tweeting about me. Myron Metcalf is tweeting about me. I'm being cast as that old get-off-my-lawn guy.
You could probably slip the sister like 10 grand. She'll do whatever you tell her to do. You got 10 grand laying around? You just give it to the sister. She'll do whatever you tell her to do for 10 grand, probably.
I didn't. I actually haven't checked. Now I've stayed off of Twitter. I'm getting murdered over the Wiseman thing. It is funny. And it really is. And truth of the matter is, my biggest villain in all this has never been James Wiseman. It's always been the system, of course. Like, now that's the weird thing. But it was striking that yesterday, that was the whole point of the column. It was striking that yesterday, at a time when you're down 14, I actually do think, like, as a player, you're the player who helped bring you here, right? You were going to win a championship. We're going to do this together, whatever else, right? That person walks away. You're having to answer questions for that person for weeks when, you know, James can't answer them. So, How about James? Where's James? You know, national TV, everything else, the whole Oregon game, whatnot. Then he walks. Now you're down 14. I do think there'd be just not a conscious decision, but a sort of unconscious, just F this, right? You know what I mean? Like, just F this. And the one thing you can say about this team more than anything else, like, even against Wichita State when they were getting blasted down by 19 against Wichita State, is they don't quit. And so it seemed like a pretty obvious column to me that on the day that James Wiseman was supposed to return the team, they win because they didn't quit. Like, what's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that. I don't even understand how people could take issue with the sentence, James Wiseman quit the team.
The reason is the word quit, here's what the objection would be. Quit has a pejorative connotation. Like, honestly, like Ben, my son, doesn't always have to. Like, my son Ben took band for up through 11th grade and at Lausanne, and then he quit. Like, I wouldn't consider that means he's a quitter or label him for life or whatever else. But the word quit, people, that's what they object to. They would object to quit. How about left the team, withdrew? Like, that quit has this sort of negative connotation that gets people rankled. How about that?
That's fine. Doesn't make it any less true. People may be rankled, whether it's James's sister.
How about we're using the word rankled. We're talking rankled here.
We're rankled.
Yeah, I don't even know
what that word means. I just repeated it because you said it. I have no idea what it means. But folks might be rankled. Like, I'm sure if you're James in James's family, you probably don't like people saying that he quit the team. And I imagine there's a sports writer somewhere who doesn't like you framing it as he quit the team. You want to know who doesn't mind every time I write James Wiseman quit the team or say James Wiseman quit the team? You know who's not rankled by it?
Who's not rankled?
His former teammates and his former coaches. I bet you they're not mad that when you write what you – I bet you people on that campus didn't have a single problem with the column you wrote yesterday.
I think that's probably true. And I actually think it may be what separates the Myron Metcalfs. He's a fine reporter, everything else, whatever, of the world. If you don't – listen, we're all anti-NCAA, you know, ridiculous system in this, right? We all agree with that. I think, though, that's the – that's the point that maybe those who are farther away are missing, is that is it the people close to the program or inside the program aren't rankled. Yes, when you say that James Wiseman quit the team, because that's how they view it.
And that is what he did. I mean, I saw you framed it the exact same way that I framed it previously, which is he's the first healthy player to walk away from a top 10 team midseason to, quote, focus on the NBA draft. That's the way he described it. And you can say that it is within his it's his right to do it. And I agree, it's his right to do it. But when you do it. Then you deal with the label to the extent people are going to put it on you. You quit the team. Now, maybe it's the best thing for James Wiseman. Maybe we'll look up one day and we'll say that's the smartest thing that young man ever did. But it doesn't mean he didn't do it. Like, it'd be like a father moving away from his children and never talking to them or seeing them and never sending money. Well, that guy's a deadbeat dad. And so don't get mad when you get called a deadbeat dad. James Wiseman quit a basketball team midseason. So every time I discuss it, I will discuss it.
I saw it. You used the word in a tweet yesterday. Quit.
Yeah,
like you're talking about the lineup. You're retweeting Giannato about the lineup, and you just threw in quit just for fun.
It's my favorite word now. People have picked up on that. I use it like that. I started using because I was the. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. This actually might be the type of thing you don't pat yourself on the back about.
Oh no, I think you started the quit.
Nobody else was
on this one. I completely. To me, the only thing I was adding yesterday was that I take it for granted that he quit because GP explained to me carefully how he quit, and so now I'm making the point that isn't it nice that the Tigers didn't quit? I'm really more focused on the guys who didn't quit, right? On Precious, and there's no quitting that Precious. You know, I mean. It is the other interesting story about this is that I do really think Precious was coming into this year. He was sort of the afterthought lottery guy, and he was widely thought as someone who would probably slip in the draft. Right? If you were to say who was going to slip, it was going to be Precious because he's all tools and he's not going to be that skilled or whatever else. And the truth of the matter is like he's done. And Dick Vitale couldn't stop saying this yesterday. He's like soaring up, but like he's doing great. All he does is increase his stock. He's carrying the team, and he is embracing all those sort of, you know, my brother, whatever team stuff that people wanted out of James Wiseman. He's been great.
He's been terrific. Like he's not. I talked about this earlier. Coming into the season, when you talk to NBA people about him, hey, what do you think of Precious Achiuwa? They'd say he's an interesting prospect. Not sure how good of a player he is. Like, not real sure he's going to be a great college player in 1 year, even if he is an obvious, you know, a prospect who's slotted to be picked in the top 20 somewhere. And like nobody said he's going to suck. It was just like let's see. I know he's a good prospect. I want to see if he's a good player. And he's been a great college basketball player, Like, that Wooden list came out last week, I guess it was, and he was top 25 Wooden Award candidate or whatever. Like, I vote in that. I had a ballot, and he was right at the top of my ballot, primarily because his last name starts with A, and I did it in alphabetical order. But still, he was at the top of the ballot. He's been great. He's been great.
No, he's been tremendous, and that was my God. I mean, who knows whether they will you know, who knows whether they'll be able to build on that? Were they temporarily staving off disaster, or were they, or did they really? Because in the course of that game, you would think they found some things: A, with the starting lineup, and B, with the much shorter rotation that he used in the second half. So maybe Penny has, and also honestly, the pick and roll, the side pick and roll that they were using time and time again, going through time and time again in the second half. So maybe they found some things there that will stand them in good stead going forward, but at least they temporarily staved off disaster.
Right, because, you know, if they lose that game yesterday, it might not have had a massive impact on what happens next, but it would have had a massive impact on the way people talk about that basketball team. It would have
changed. Yes.
Like, today's radio station would be today would have been totally opposite of what it's actually been. Just because they were able to close well in those final few minutes. And I know the past four games have been shaky, like the loss to Georgia, the loss to Wichita State, and then you're down big against – I mean, they were down double digits against Tulane and also down double digits against South Florida. So, like, they could like have lost all four of those games, even if the Tulane game, they got that one back under control pretty quickly. But either, so it's been a shaky four-game stretch. But through 16 games, they're 13-3, and they've only lost one game that they weren't supposed to lose. And they've done this despite their most talented player, you ready for it, quitting the team mid-season. And
I can't believe you put it that way. That is so cool.
That's not easy to do, and it's not to be taken for granted. Like, losing your most talented player mid-season, same thing happened in North Carolina for different reasons. Like, Cole Anthony didn't quit. He just got hurt, but he's still no longer available to North Carolina, and North Carolina's 8-8. 8-8 at North Carolina. 2-7 in the past 9 games. They can't beat anybody anymore. That's a Hall of Fame coach, lost his best player, team went preseason top 10 team, lost its best player, team went straight into the tank. It's going to miss the NCAA tournament. Texas Tech, preseason top 15 team, lost its best player, Jamias Ramsey, for like a 4 or 5 game stretch, immediately lost 2 games to unranked teams. Suddenly, Texas Tech wasn't ranked anymore. They get Jamias Ramsey back, they start winning again. They're ranked again. Losing your best player is a major, major obstacle, and yet Memphis has, I think, shown itself to be good despite its best player quitting, and that is a real big picture thing that I wish more people would focus on. Instead of nitpicking the offense or getting frustrated about long scoring droughts, your best player quit your team midseason and you're 13-3 and still nationally ranked. That's pretty good stuff.
Where do you have them again? You have them 23?
I have them 23 right now, and they're 22nd in the AP poll.
AP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
anyway, it was a good day. It was a narrow escape, but it was an escape, and it's fun. Precious is fun to watch, man. That's fun. And Tyler, I love the whole thing. I love watching Tyler play well. Like, he was the other guy. He was out of here. He was going to be, let's be honest, he was going to have transferred by now, right? I mean, if at the start of the season. And what's he doing? He's hitting big shot after big shot.
I'm talking to Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Obviously, the starting lineup conversation was something people were focused on heading into the weekend. Penny did shake up the starting lineup. Alex Lomax started at point guard. Malcolm Dandridge started in the middle. Isaiah Maurice didn't play at all. Boogie Ellis only played 13 minutes. Damian Ball's minutes also limited. And Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal I had on in the opening hour, he noticed something on Twitter, Instagram, and it's something I noticed as well. Like, team picture, locker room, everybody's flexing after a road win, and Isaiah Maurice doesn't look happy. Boogie Ellis doesn't look happy. And as we talked about last week, like, ultimately the most important thing is to win basketball games, not to you know, massage egos or keep people happy. You've got to win basketball games, and that means there needed to be a shakeup in the starting lineup and probably in the minutes distribution as well. But it doesn't mean that when you do that, it can't cause other issues. And I'm not saying there are any issues. I have no insight into that. I'm just saying that this is precisely the type of thing that can cause issues. And then you've got a team photograph where the guys who were most impacted by the changes, they weren't showing their teeth with a big smile in the photograph.
Yeah. And let's just pretend that we know that they actually, that was reflective of their internal mood. With all due respect, you don't really care if Isaiah Maurice is happy, but you do care if Boogie Ellis long-term is happy.
That's
right.
That's exactly. Yeah. That matters. Like, yeah, I don't, and, like, Isaiah Maurice can be unhappy forever. It wouldn't,
right. he can be unhappy forever. Let's be honest. He was gifted a spot and did nothing to keep it. And so, and will not, you know, he might hit a big shot. It's possible that he could have a big moment or a big shot down the stretch of the season for Memphis. In the end, they actually said that he was injured, but whether the injury had anything to do with his demotion or not, I don't really know. There could be stuff going on there. The Boogie thing, in the end, you want him to be happy because you want him to be part of this program going forward, not just going forward. Like, in the end, bodies are going to be an issue at some point. Like, you do need, you know, you need Boogie in the rotation. You need Damian Ball in the rotation. But there's plenty of time to get them playing well and being happy and whatever else. No, they weren't happy yesterday. But there's plenty of time for them to be happy going forward. To me, the other one that was interesting was that Jaden Hardaway played considerable minutes in the first half, did not play well, and then did not see the floor in the second half. And that absolutely is sort of becoming a story. Does he deserve the minutes he gets? And it's tough for him. Like, he's in this position through no fault of his own, right? I mean, this is what happens when you're, whether you're Tubby Smith's kid or Bruce Pearl's kid, or I don't know, wherever these situation comes up, wherever they come up before, most famously really with Kentucky, really, and Saul probably. Does he deserve the minutes he gets? And I thought it was notable that when they were desperate and every single possession mattered, they needed to get in order to come back and win, Jaden did not see the floor.
It's a tricky situation. I was having a conversation with a former college basketball coach last week about this exact thing. And we weren't talking about Memphis and Jaden and Penny at all. We were talking about Syracuse, where Buddy Boeheim, Jim's son, is now leading the team in field goal attempts. And he's a good player, but on a good Syracuse team, he should be a seventh or eighth rotation guy. He should never be leading Syracuse in field goal attempts. And Jim, yet that is what's happening. And this is also probably the worst Syracuse team Jim Boeheim has ever coached. And the point that this coach made to me, which is a point other coaches have made to me before, is that if your son is going to be on your team, you need him to be the best player or you need him to be the worst player. Like, you need him to never play, or you need him to be so undeniably great that he plays.
You need him to be the Calipari.
You need him to be Doug McDermott.
Right.
Or you need him to be Bradley Calipari.
Right.
Where you get in trouble is when he's Stephen Pearl. Because Bruce would play Stephen Pearl all those minutes at Tennessee. And I can just tell you that wasn't popular with all Tennessee fans, you know, because it's much easier to navigate this thing when your son is Doug McDermott or your son is Bradley Calipari. When your son is a legitimate Division I player who could reasonably get some minutes and is getting some minutes, but then some people don't think he should be getting those minutes, it does become a little bit of a complicated thing. I mean, I see the same tweets you see, you know, from Memphis fans. Trust me, there's not a non-Memphis fan who's brought up to me once Jaden Hardaway playing. It's all Memphis fans saying, why is he getting the minutes that he gets?
Well, and it's because, let's be honest, there is no – he is – on this roster, he's one of the least skilled dynamic players, right? And so anyone, if his name were Jaden Smith – or whatever, he would, and played minutes, there would be moments when fans are saying, get him out of there, right? Get him out of there. Every player has a get him out of there. They were saying that about Alo last year. Get him out of there. Unless you're one of the best players, that's going to be said about everybody. But when you mix in the dynamic that he's the coach's son, it just becomes toxic because everyone thinks that every single minute he's playing is because he's the coach's son.
Right.
And so there you have it. So I will be interested to see what happens going forward because, I mean, I do think right now he's a liability. He just is. And so, no, he's not, you know, but so I don't know. There's a lot to be figured out for this team going forward, but I thought the starting lineup was dramatically better. I thought Malcolm, even though he didn't get a lot of minutes in the second half, I thought he did some good things in the first half, and I think they hit on some things yesterday.
One thing I tweeted last night was that if you look at the top five players in minutes played in yesterday's game, it was in order Precious Achiuwa, Alex Lomax, Tyler Harris, DJ Jeffries, Lester Quinones. I think 16 games into this season, we now know, or at least we know in this moment, those are your five best college basketball players on the roster. I don't know that those five have to play together all the time or even a lot of the time, but those five players, Precious, Alex, Tyler, DJ, and Lester, are your five best players right now. They're not your five most heralded. They're not your five best NBA prospects, but they're your five best college basketball players right now, and I think going forward, unless foul trouble or an injury disrupts things, those five dudes are going to be the one getting the most minutes on the roster.
Yeah, I agree with that. There are times when Damian Baugh has been one of the five best players. Like, he would be the...
That's fair.
Boogie has five, one of the five best reputations. Gets Tennessee, Damian Baugh was one of the five best players. Sure. But that can... When DJ's bad and Damian's good or whatever. But I think fundamentally that order is correct. And the only one that I would say, might, by dint of performance, slide in there various times now this year would have been good. When Damian is good, he can have the impact, certainly, of one of your five best players. But, I mean, you're not going to just play five players. So you need those five players to play, and then the five you just mentioned, and then you need Damian to play, and you need Boogie to play, and you need a big, right? It would have Malcolm or whomever, and that's an eight-man rotation right there. Like, what are most teams... Eight's
about the right number. Like, you can win national championships with an eight-man rotation. I mean, really, it's been done, I think, with seven dudes. But like, eight's the number you probably – eight's the number I would – how about this? Eight's the number a normal basketball team settles into. You have to also acknowledge that at the pace Memphis plays at, you do need more players. You know, I know some people look at minutes played and they're like, why isn't this person playing more minutes? Because they're tired. I mean, Memphis plays at a top 15 pace in America. It is hard to go play 35 minutes playing at that pace.
Right. So you got those five. You got Boogie, Damian, Malcolm, maybe Lance, right? And then whatever. And then Jaden could get some minutes depending on whatever happens. Anyway, I it'll be interesting to see what happens with Cincinnati. And I did not look forward to today, the meltdown, if they had lost yesterday. That would have been ugly. And so I'm glad they staved it off.
I'm talking to Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN. I want to turn our attention to the Grizzlies because they won again yesterday. 122-102, beat the Golden State Warriors. And it's a five-game winning streak. They are in eighth in the Western Conference playoff standings, and Tim McMahon tweeted the following last night: the only NBA teams with more wins than the Grizzlies since Ja Morant returned from his back injury are the Bucks and the Jazz. You know, like 2 weeks ago when we were talking about playoff stuff, we were giggling a little bit. It's not a joke anymore. Like, I still, if I had to predict, will this team make the playoffs? I think I would still say no, but I'm not sure. They're playing well, and they're consistently playing well. And really, to make the playoffs, all they're going to have to do is keep doing what they've been doing lately, which is, they've been beating everybody lately, five straight wins. But like, if you just beat bad teams consistently, that's going to be enough, maybe, to get you where you're trying to get to.
Yeah, I think it's real. It's very clearly a real playoff race. There's nothing that is not real about this playoff race, and hopefully they can stay in it. I think you would clearly, if you were betting, you'd bet no, because A, San Antonio is one of the teams that you're competing against, and they go to the playoffs every year. And by the way, they just beat Boston, Milwaukee, and Toronto. Yes, you beat them at home in a very tight game, but I think you would pick San Antonio over them. Depending on what happens with Zion, you may pick New Orleans over them. You might pick Portland over them, depending what they do going forward. So everybody know it. They're not the favorite, but they're absolutely in the hunt. And I mean, they're good. I think we can definitively say this is a good basketball team, not great basketball team, not whatever, but the way they've certainly been playing over the last 15 games, they have turned into a good basketball team. And I think there's been, you just look at you can sort of see the uptick in interest across the city. I think A, you see it in the crowds. B, you just sort of, people talk to me about the Grizzlies now, ask me questions about the Grizzlies now in a way that even a month ago they were not. I think people are starting to buy in, and honestly, forget. I mean, Steve Kerr went on and on about the Grizzlies last night about how they're one of the best stories in the NBA, and I think it's pretty clear. If you look at the Grizzlies core, you can sort of look at it and think, could this be like the core that grew into the Golden State Warriors? Could this be like the core that grew into the San Antonio Spurs and what they became? Could this be the core that grew into the Oklahoma City Thunder? A lot of work to be done. They got to add more players everyone has to stay healthy and everything else. But to me, one of the really striking things about all this was watching how much fun the players were. The fans are obviously having fun, but the players are having a blast too. And you get the sense that it is in the same way that the core four became this band of brothers, brother from another mother, all that stuff. And to the extent that they didn't leave Memphis, they also didn't want to leave each other. you do wonder whether they could be sort of cultivating that same thing in a very different, much quicker look here and now.
And you know, I know conventional wisdom tells us that, you know, a team led by a pair of 20-year-olds does not go to the NBA playoffs. Like, that is not a normal thing. To be this young with at the top of your roster and be winning enough to be in the eighth spot of the Western Conference standings 40 games into a season. But I promise you, Ja Morant doesn't think that way, and Jaren Jackson Jr. don't think that way. The people involved always think they can be the exception to any rule. And so, you know, I can do all the homework for you and show you how unusual it is, how rare it is for a team led by two 20-year-olds to get where this team is now trying to get. But it doesn't matter at all to Ja Morant. It doesn't matter at all to Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, and trust me, if they got into a series with the Lakers, we would all know that that wouldn't go well. They wouldn't necessarily think that. It's I didn't expect to be middle of January landing in New York on Friday night and then immediately starting to stream the game on my phone because it's
you could not watch.
Yeah, because I could not watch.
It's nuts. Well, I mean, let's be honest. A week from today is MLK Day, right? And what we were hoping was, oh, man, I hope Zion comes, because by then it's going to be grim, right? They're going to have stacked up a whole lot of losses, and really the only thing that will be watched is Ja versus Zion. We need Zion to get healthy. Well, Zion's not back yet, and I hope he does. Like, it's a week from today. It would be great if that is Zion versus Ja. Absolutely tremendous. But if it's not, certainly from a local perspective, the team is still compelling and fun, and it will be a fun game, and it will be lively and whatever else. Like, they are, you don't need Zion. It would be wonderful to have Zion, but you don't need Zion to make that game interesting. The Grizzlies are themselves right now. They're absolutely, someone else saw it, who tweeted it, that they're a top five watch in the NBA right now. And I think that's probably right. It's just a blast.
For what it's worth, Mitch Lawrence, who is the host of a SiriusXM NBA show, tweeted today that the Pelicans are leaning toward debuting Zion Williamson Thursday against the Jazz. And that would mean that the next game after that is against the Clippers. And that's Saturday, and then Monday here in Memphis. So it's not a back to back. It would be a the third game of a 3-game in 6-day stretch, but it's not a back to back. And so in theory, if you trust Mitch Lawrence, Zion Williamson should be available to play for the Pelicans against the Grizzlies on Monday inside FedEx Forum, which would be awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But again, I'm looking forward to the Grizzlies as a competitive enterprise right now, which I never possibly would have imagined.
Last thing before I let you go, the Tennessee Titans are in the AFC Championship game. Like, none of this makes sense. The Grizzlies are on a 5-game winning streak. The Titans are in the AFC Championship. And I saw you on, I believe it was Facebook, ask people, like, how do you feel, Memphians, how do you feel about this? Do you hate it? Do you love it? Do you not care? What's the most common response you get from Memphians about the Titans?
Funny, I opened up the phones about this, and people are motivated to call in for different reasons, sure. Right? And very clearly, the people who are motivated to call in were Titans fans who've, like, been quiet and don't get enough respect or don't get enough whatever run or whatever it is. And so I think the first 10 calls I got were all love the Titans, right? I guess my view is this. Like, I'm not – there are some people who say, get over it. It's Memphis, Tennessee's team. It's got the state name. Everybody should pull for the Titans. And I'm just like, I don't – do what you want to. Like, if you want to love the Titans because they're Tennessee's team and they're 3 hours down the road and you take your kid and they're an admirable team and whatever else, I think that's great. Do that. If you want to hate the Titans because you hate Nashville and everything about Nashville and whatever else, and you're resentful that the state government didn't let us take down our statues or whatever else, do that. I just think everybody has much less energy about it is what I really think. I don't think – like, I'm working on another sort of column about this, and the Oilers-Titans stuff, that was 20 years ago. Right. Paul Tagliabue's dead. You know, he called Jim Rout Mayor Stout. That was a great moment. He called Mayor Stout. I want to thank Mayor Stout. Well, Paul Tagliabue, he is dead, isn't he? I hope he's dead. I hope I didn't just kill off Paul Tagliabue. I think he's dead. I know Bud Adams is dead.
I don't.
He's the one who called us Memphanites. So
Like, it's a different ownership. It's whatever else. And I think the main thing is that I do think a lot of this comes down to how Memphis feels about itself, right? And right now, I think Memphis feels pretty good about itself, whether it's the Grizzlies or Tiger football or the city generally. And so I just sense there's much less resentment in the air than there once was. And so, but I'm not going to tell people either way. I don't think people have to support the Titans because it's Tennessee's team. Hell, the Titans fans weren't even supporting the Titans about halfway through the season.
Right.
But I also, like, it's fun to hate teams. If people want to hate them, fine, do that too. My general sense is there's not a lot of people might. The only people really who have energy about it are the people who like the Titans. That's my real sense. I think the people who really care about this game one way or another are just people who love the Titans. And there's some of those folks out there. I don't know. What's your sense of the populace? I know you think it's ridiculous to not like Tennessee, to Nashville, it's a great city, blah, blah, blah. But what's your sense of what people think?
I think most people don't care that much. Like, I don't think it moves the needle that much for most people. I know that it is the Tennessee Titans. It doesn't feel like it's Tennessee's team. It's Nashville's team.
It's not Tennessee's team.
It's Nashville's.
And it's different. Someone said, why is this different? I was asked recently, why is this different than the New England Patriots? Whereas in Connecticut, New Hampshire, and whatever else, it's just different. Like, we're just not we are not really one region. We are not one unified region, right? Like, Missouri, they all root for the Cardinals because everyone takes it for granted that that's the biggest, most important city, but they all are basically suburban, you know, or whatever. They're all part of Cardinal territory. They're no more the Tennessee's Titans any more than the Predators are Tennessee's Predators, just because you call the name that. That's just silly. They're not that. But they are the closest team, and if you want to like that team because we don't have a team, like that team. If you want to like the Dallas Cowboys, like that team. If you want to like the Buffalo Bills, God bless you, but like that team.
Yeah, that's mostly how I feel. The only thing that I don't find it odd that somebody who lives in the state of Tennessee, even in the city of Memphis, would want to be a Titans fan. That's Bennett Doyle. He's a Titans fan. He loves the Titans. That makes sense to me. I never felt compelled to be a Titans fan simply because it's in the state of Tennessee. But if other people do, that's fine with me. The only thing that I find odd is the over-the-top disdain for the Tennessee Titans simply because you're a Memphian. Like, I've got one of my close friends is like, we're in a group text, and he's, like, mad, like, seriously mad when the Titans are, you know, beating the Ravens. And I finally just asked him, I was like, yo, why are you so upset about this? Like, and he's just, I love Memphis, so F Nashville and everything that Nashville represents, including the Titans. But that, to me, and I said this right to his face, so I'm not talking behind his back, to me is odder than, like, actually enjoying the Titans or not caring about the Titans. To hate them simply because they play home games in Nashville, I don't know. It just – Memphians so often want – and I'm not trying to generalize here, but Memphians are so proud of Memphis and want you to think that they love Memphis more than anything else on the planet. And when you have that kind of hatred for something else simply because it's in that city, it seems to suggest you're not as in love with this. I don't know. Like, it seems to, if you really loved yourself as much as you say you do, you probably wouldn't hate that other thing as much as you clearly do, because that other thing wouldn't matter to you that much at all. Does that make sense at all?
Yes. But I mean, again, we've had this discussion a million times. I know exactly why I think, and that's why I'm not going to criticize those people either. Like, if the people want to love the Titans, love the Titans. If you want to just get off on hating Nashville, I understand it. It's because Nashvillians are a racist bunch of new money losers.
Oh, cool.
And so, no, I'm just joking. The stereotype, right? The stereotype is, this is just true. How many East Tennesseans have you basically heard call Memphis an asshole? I have heard it many times.
Sure.
I mean, I see it on Twitter. I hate that asshole. I would never let my family go anywhere near the Liberty Bowl. They're going to get shot.
You'll be, like, fine at the Liberty Bowl. It's the interstate you got to worry about.
Right, exactly.
The interstate is where they'll get you.
So I get sick of that garbage just like everybody else does. And I hear that garbage mostly, let's be honest, you hear it from some Memphians, right? That's true. But you hear it a lot from East Tennessee. And so because of that, they hate East Tennessee. They don't just abstractly decide to hate East or Middle Tennessee. They hate it because of what they think is that
region of the state's attitude toward Memphis. I don't think anymore it has anything to do with what the Oilers did or anything else. I think it just has to do with that.
Yeah.
And I understand it, even if I don't necessarily trade in it like I once did.
And that is Jeff Calkins. He'll be back in studio tomorrow morning.
They're not racist. I want to take it back. Nationals are not all racist.
They're not.
So you know.
They're not.
But James Wiseman is a quitter.
But James Wiseman is a quitter.
I'm quitting. Just for I am quitting this conversation.
All right. All right.
Before I get in any more trouble.
Yeah. Don't say anything else. That's Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN, insisting that Nashvillians are racist and James Wiseman is a quitter. We'll be back in a second. So Bill had a home out in Kyivo. He wanted to sell it. He did exactly what I've been telling you to do for years. He got in touch with Josh Hysall. Josh Hysall went to work, got 8 showings on the first day. He sold Bill's home in Kyivo for the full asking price. How did Josh Hysall do it? He did it with his 45-day guarantee plan. It's a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold faster and for more money than the average agent. Josh is able to do this because he's experienced, because he's effective, because he understands how to expose your home to the most buyers with the best marketing strategy. Then he understands how to negotiate for the most money possible. But the first step is Josh simply helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive. You guys agree on a price? That's when Josh Hysall goes to work. And if your home isn't sold in 45 days at that agreed-upon price, Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until it sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick. Totally up to you, and it's a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh Hysall doesn't obligate you to anything. If he isn't doing his job, in your opinion, you can fire him, no questions asked. You can even do it with a text message. Flexible fees. There are no upfront costs. So if you're trying to sell a home, call the only real estate agent I'd call if I wanted to sell my home. It's Josh Hysall, 461-8147. That's Josh Hysall, 461-8147, on the web. JoshSellsTheMidSouth.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
You'll love and deal with a family-owned business that treats people like people, not like customers. Please go visit my friends at Mercedes-Benz of Memphis, 5389 Poplar. As I told you, I'm not just a spokesperson or an endorser of Mercedes-Benz of Memphis. I'm also a Mercedes owner, have been for years. So that means I own a vehicle that, yeah, looks great and rides great. Also, super safe. Because when you buy a Mercedes-Benz from Mercedes-Benz of Memphis, what you're doing is purchasing 100 years of innovation and safety. These vehicles are not just nice looking, great riding vehicles. They're also some of the safest vehicles you can purchase. And it is true, it's a luxury vehicle by definition. But in some cases, a Mercedes is more affordable than you might realize. For instance, the new A-Class model, it starts at just $32,000. You can have a brand new Mercedes from Mercedes-Benz of Memphis starting at just $32,000. And some leases start at just $339 a month. $339 a month for 26 months. That's at Mercedes-Benz of Memphis, 5389 Poplar, 5389 Poplar. Payment credits on certified pre-owned vehicles. Certified pre-owned vehicles, interest rates as low as 1.99 at Mercedes-Benz of Memphis, our city's original Mercedes dealership. On the web, mbofmemphis.com, mbofmemphis.com. So we're getting closer to kickoff of tonight's national championship game. Talked a little bit about it in the first hour. 7 o'clock kick. You can watch it on ESPN. You'll be able to listen right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Pre-game show actually starts right at 6 o'clock. So as soon as I go off the air, college football national championship game pregame show will start. Kickoff a little after 7 o'clock Central. It is Clemson and LSU, a 14-0 team against another 14-0 team. Both teams quarterbacked by guys who are currently projected to be number one overall picks in NFL drafts. Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback, projected right now to go number one overall in the 2020 NFL draft. And then Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson quarterback, projected right now to go number one in the 2021 NFL draft. So we got star power, awesome quarterbacks, incredible brands of the sport. And the fact that it's LSU playing for a title in New Orleans at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome is just an incredible story. Like, you know, they moved the championship game around. Yeah. It just so happens that it's in New Orleans this year. And it's not only LSU trying to win a championship in New Orleans. It is Ed Orgeron trying to win a championship in New Orleans, which would just be an all-time great coaching story. Like, he went 3-21 in the SEC in 3 years at Ole Miss. Like, a colossal failure. And not just like a bad coach, like some other guys are sometimes bad coaches. Like, a bad coach who's a cartoon character.
Right.
Like, who is the butt of everybody's joke. Like, nobody took him seriously because of the way he talked, because of the way he looked, and because his team stunk. And then, one way or another, he finds himself right place, right time, and this man who was born in Louisiana and raised in Louisiana ends up as the head coach at LSU. And even then, most people, myself included, thought it was insane. Like, you're going to hire the guy who couldn't win anything at Ole Miss, and you're going to hand him the keys to the LSU football program. Like, I think I did entire radio segments saying, "All I'm just telling you, that guy will never get you where you want to go."
Right.
You look around at who are the best college football coaches, and they're not cartoon character meatheads like Ed Orgeron. It's Chris Peterson. It's Urban Meyer. It's Dan Mullen.
Right.
It's Nick Saban. It's these super serious, smart people who happen to coach football. And you're going to give the LSU program to Ed Orgeron, this cartoon character. Here we are.
It's incredible.
And he did the smartest thing he could do, which is get out of his own way.
Right.
When you're the head coach at LSU, you're going to have better players than most. Incredible athletes. Anybody at LSU is going to get incredible athletes.
Yeah.
It's why people consider it one of the best jobs in the country, because you have access to most to many of the best athletes in the country. So why don't I just go hire somebody who understands a modern offense, and I just give it to him, and
right.
I stay out of it. I don't have anything to do with it. Just let that guy do it. And suddenly, and Les Miles should have done this. He was either not smart enough to do it or too stubborn to do it. But you just get out of the way. And now you've got an innovative modern offense with all these LSU athletes and a difference maker at quarterback.
Yeah.
And now you're 14-0 and a 5-point favorite over the reigning national champions in the national championship game. It is an incredible story. And if you don't have tickets already, you probably aren't going, because you know how you can go to like StubHub or SeatGeek or any of those places, look at the secondary market. The lowest price ticket available right now, like just to get in.
These LSU fans are probably driving it up, right?
Well, of course. The whole state's trying to get into
a window. We're talking a few $100, $500, $600, $1,000.
Cheapest right now is $9.95.
Shoot.
The cheapest ticket. Like, if you just said, you know what? To hell with it.
Whoa.
LSU is playing in the Superdome, national championship game. I'm going. I don't care what it costs. I'm going to buy a ticket right now. Cheapest you could get is $995.
That's crazy.
Dollars. Big, big price.
That's crazy.
Should be an incredible game. I mean, two great teams. Like, sometimes you end up in championship games, especially college basketball, where it's not necessarily the two best teams or two great teams.
Yeah.
You got two great teams here. Clemson, LSU, both undefeated with stud quarterbacks. Kick at 7. You can listen to it here on 92.9 FM, ESPN. We'll be back with Dinner to Go.
Get to us a Sunday.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Have you noticed cracks in the bricks above your garage? If so, do not ignore them, because this is not the type of problem that's just going to go away on its own. It's the type of problem that will eventually become a bigger and more expensive problem unless you address it now, because what it suggests is that you've got a lintel problem, which is very common and also very bad. Here's the good news, though. American Standard Foundation can fix it for you. They offer a lintel lift, which is the only patented system for lintel repairs. They can fix everything without having to rebuild your entire garage door area. Could save you thousands of dollars. Now, I understand that if you see those cracks, your instincts might be to just ignore them. I'm the same way in a lot of ways. Just fingers crossed, maybe this won't get worse. But trust me when I tell you, that's a dumb approach to this very specific problem, because once you see the cracks, the real damage is on the way. Could be a matter of weeks, might be a matter of months, but the real damage is coming, so you need to attack it before things get worse. Or you can wait. But when you wait, you're going to end up with a very expensive problem on your hands. So when you pull into your home tonight, look about the garage and see if you see any cracks. I hope you don't. That would be awesome. But if you do, contact ASFR and get a free quote for the patented lintel lift repair solution. Just visit asfoundationrepair.com. That's asfoundationrepair.com and click the lintel lift tab or call them 901-390-5568, 901-390-5568. Let's do Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is brought to you by Memphis Barbecue Company.
It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
A whole bunch of stuff, but we mostly focused on the University of Memphis men's basketball program. Big win down in South Florida yesterday. Down 14 points, less than 14 to play. Comeback win at 68-64 to improve to 13-3 overall, 2-1 in the league. And the point I made in the opening segment is that I understand losing to Georgia at home is rough, and then, you know, getting handled fairly easily at Wichita State is discouraging, and, you know, being down big to South Florida is also less than ideal. But they're 13-3, still nationally ranked, 16 games into the season, despite the fact that the most talented player quit the team midseason. It's not easy to do. Go look at what North Carolina did when it lost its best player for different reasons, but same thing, lost its best player. North Carolina's 8-8 now, 2-7 past nine games. They're going to miss the NCAA tournament. Texas Tech went through a little stretch where its best player, Jamias Ramsey, was hurt, immediately lost two games to unranked opponents. Memphis is good, even though its best player quit its team midseason. And if you're looking for the biggest takeaway through the first 16 games, that should be it.
What's the biggest game tonight?
Obviously, college football's national title game. Undefeated Clemson against undefeated LSU at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans. Hard to get better than this. One team's got the quarterback likely to be the first pick in the 2020 NFL draft. That's LSU, Joe Burrow. The other team has the quarterback likely to be the first overall pick, 2021 NFL draft. That's Clemson, Trevor Lawrence. Just awesome stuff. Ed Orgeron, the 58-year-old son of Baba and Coco Orgeron. That's for real, by the way.
Baba
and Coco. Those are his
Come
parents.
Come on, man.
Swear to God.
What the hell, Baba?
Baba and Coco Orgeron brought little Ed Orgeron into this world.
Dear Lord.
On the verge of winning a national title for LSU in a national title game played in Louisiana, the state in which he was born and raised. Tremendous stuff. Man went 3-21 in the SEC in 3 years as the head coach at Ole Miss, and now is on the verge of winning a national championship. LSU is a 5-point favorite. The total 67. National title game kicks off a little after 7 o'clock. You can listen right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
What should I watch on TV?
There's a new Frontline episode tonight. It's a documentary, a multi-part documentary called America's Great Divide, Obama to Trump, Part 1. And it's an investigation into America's increasingly bitter, divided, and toxic politics. So if you're interested in that, and that does sound interesting, it's tonight at 8 o'clock. On WKNO.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
Jeff Calkins wrote a column about all the Memphis basketball players that didn't quit the team midseason and rallied to win at South Florida yesterday. So if you haven't read that yet, go check it out, dailymemphian.com.
What's on tap for tomorrow?
We'll look back at the title game, Clemson-LSU, and we'll get ready for the surging Grizzlies' return to FedEx Forum. Five-game winning streak with the Rockets coming to town, so it should be a fun afternoon. I'm looking forward to it already. Enjoy your night. I'm going to enjoy mine. We're going to meet back here tomorrow at 4. Till then, be careful. Be kind. Be good. Rep your hood.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.